Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
And today we are going to talk about employer branding 3.0. And to introduce the topic, I would like to say that employer branding has really increased its importance, if I may say so, by becoming a tool to build a distinctive corporate culture for employees, and also kind of becoming more and more important to the clients. And if we start from the very, very beginning, how do you define the employer branding 3.0? What is it, and how much does it differ from the previous versions?
Well, I would say it does. I mean, the core of it hasn't changed that much. It's just that I started working with this like 20 years ago, and then the word employer branding was not even there, the definition. But the definition has very often been very much looking only on like the outside. How do people outside perceive the company, you know, the benefits of working there from the outside? What does the culture look like? And what has happened over these 20 years, I would say, is that the transparency has increased. There are new companies on its way, companies that have become really big, like the Googles and the Facebooks, that were not even considered as employers before. And with the transparency and with the social media, I would say that the landscape has changed. And what we can see with employer branding 3.0 is that the brand is much more owned by the people working within the company and the culture, and also that now employer branding companies that really work with the 3.0, they do much more of the like internal marketing in order to create the internal ambassadors that go outside of the company. So I would say from more like just looking at the traction and recruiting, today is much more development of your existing staff and making them the ambassadors. Because as we know, the biggest attraction you have are the people you already have within, you can say, because it all starts from within. But that hasn't changed, really. It's just the way how you express yourself, and also how you much more work with your existing staff, I would say. That's what I would say is the 3.0. But still, nobody can be an attractive employer and have a strong employer brand unless you have a strong brand internally that your own people agree with what you're saying. And the transparency today makes it much harder. I mean, today you have like sites. I mean, today if you want to book a hotel or a restaurant, you go to TripAdvisor and you see people who've been eating at the restaurant. They have their own pictures, their own views and values. Same thing with hotels. And that thing has started through Glassdoor and lots of other players today in the market, that you go and check up an employer and you hear from the people actually working there or used to work there. And that's something that has really changed the playground for everybody.
Absolutely. Is it kind of the same story for all type of companies, or is it different if you work in a small company where you have fewer employees, or in a bigger corporation where is a lot of influence and kind of a lot of people talking about what is going on?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's different. I mean, the way you communicate. I mean, if you are a global, and if you are PwC with 110,000 employees, of course it's different. But I would say the core of it is still the same. I mean, why do people want to work here? And you still is. I mean, if you're 10 people and you're going to hire two more people or make sure that these 10 people stay with you, it's still the same thing. That, I mean, why do people want to work here? How can they develop? Are they proud ambassadors on what we're doing? I mean, it's the same thing. It's just that if you are, the other big companies are more like super tankers, right? And they do. Yeah. They work more strategically because they have to, you know. Is the core business, and you employ every year thousands of people. So of course it's different. But I would say I work a lot with smaller industrial companies, for example, in Sweden. And I can see today that in Sweden we have a problem with a mismatch. We have lots of people who are unemployed, but the ones they are looking for, they get so many offers. So suddenly they can't just, you know, show the products and think that somebody would be attracted to the product. They much more have to show the skin and the culture of the company, because you buy people with their hearts and feelings and not just, you know, with the hardcore facts. So of course it's different in industries, but at the end of the day, you employ people and people get attracted by different things. So you have to know your target groups. It's the same.
Can you tell me a good story about how a small manufacturing or production company can attract really the best people?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, who is the best for us, right? Yeah. So I would say that even if you're a small company, I think it's so important because very often you have so much to do on a day-to-day basis that you hardly have the time to really think, this sounds really boring, but to have a strategic plan, like, you know, what competences would we need for the future? For lots of companies, it's like, oh my God, you know, like maybe half of our workforce will maybe retire within 5 years. That means that we really have to have a succession plan in place. And very often when you're really stressed, you tend only to look in your very near surrounding. And what I've seen with lots of like production small companies, they start to understand that the attraction of their company also lies within the attraction of the place where you're going to work. So lots of these companies are actually started to cooperate, realizing that, you know, if we want to attract new people or new competences to our, you know, town or area, we really need to work together. We need to make sure that there's good schooling. If you bring a partner or a spouse, is it possible for that person, you know, to get employed maybe some other company? Maybe we could share some competences. So first of all, you have to have an awareness from people leading the company and the board, realizing that we have to think in a long time horizon, I would say 3 to 5 years. And also very important is to do this internal to see, okay, what competences do we have today? And what if X, Y, Z would happen? Because what I find is that lots of them, they only work like from now and then next month and maybe 2 months ahead. But sometimes you really need to, you know, look a little bit beyond the horizon and see, okay, where do we want to go? And also, how do we perceive the market? Because very often you're very good at following your clients, or at least you try. But it's exactly the same with talent. It's like, okay, in the long run, we want to have these clients. We want to keep them. How do we do that? How do we make sure that we are innovative and that we deliver the products and services that our clients want? So I would say it all starts with a plan. Because very often people come to me too late and say, oh, Anna, it's very hard for us to attract the best. So my first question is, who is the best? Because sometimes we look for blue squirrels, right? We look for people who don't exist, right? So first question is often, okay, who is the best for our company now? And, you know, in the short term, in the long term. And very often when I meet companies, even small ones, they say, you know, that they have very often been very good at networking with the local schools. They've had people maybe writing theses or, you know, made sure that they're quite transparent, inviting people to the company, you know, establishing a brand much, much earlier, and to keep that network of people. Because very often in that network, other people know other people. Because that's also employee branding today, 3.0. I mean, so many recruitments, I mean, they are through the networks, I mean. And an easy start, I'm like, are you on LinkedIn? Well, lots of people are. And they say, oh, we're not in that kind of business where people do have LinkedIn. Well, I shouldn't say so, because the first thing you do today is you look up a company on LinkedIn. Who works there? Would I like to work with these people? So that's a good start. And the best thing is always to look upon your company from an outside view. I mean, the brand and attractiveness, of course, starts from within. But very often when I look at home pages, when I look at career sites, you talk in a language as if you talk to yourselves. And that's not very attractive for other people. You tend to forget who we are, why do we work here, you know, what's the higher objective, and make yourself attractive for the people looking at you, you know. So, and very often you get very much into detail or about very much about your products, and, you know, and I would say start with a bigger picture. Why do you work here, you know, whom do you work with, who are we working here, and then people get, you know, attracted and start to listen, and then you can tell all your stories about your patents and products and, you know. So first have a plan. How does it look with competences? And then also to make sure that you step into some other person's shoes to look upon yourself from the outside view. It's tough sometimes to do that.
Very good. You made it very crystal clear, really, to everyone why
really?
The plan is needed.
Yeah, and it sounds so very boring, right? But what I say sometimes is very often, I mean, all companies need to sell something, right? Even if you're a municipality and you're a public company, I mean, still you sell to your employees, not just to your employees, but, you know, to people working or living in your municipality. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to have a product or a service that people want or need, right? Or have to have.
Absolutely.
And I mean, very often you follow your clients. And, you know, I mean, it's much easier to grow a client, an existing one, than always trying to find new clients. I mean, it's much easier to sell more stuff because you create trust. I mean, it's the same thing with employees. But very often we tend only to look at the clients. And I'm saying you need to have just as crystal clear plan for your employees. And the younger your employees are, they expect to have a personal plan. Like, where am I going? You know, what's the next step? How can I develop, you know, so I'm listened to and I get this feedback. And it sounds very basic, but very often you forget this because you think that, oh, yeah, we work year in, year out. And then somebody new comes and they say very often to me, oh, it's quite funny when we recruit new people. They don't stay that long. Is that something with the young generation? And I say, to be honest, it's not. I mean, it's the way you look upon them, right? And if they feel that they can develop, fine. And also what could be very attractive is that you – if you're like in an industrial section of town, why don't you cooperate with others, you know? Maybe you can go from one company to another. I mean, the sky is the limit, you know, but I believe firmly that you need to cooperate with other people. And you really need to take some, if you can't do this yourself, take some professional help. You know, I know I would do lots of projects with the European Union, for example, about these strategic competence plans. There are lots of choices out there. You just have to start looking. And I always say, you know, good HR is the best, you know, business thing you can have within your company. When HR and marketing, when they marry a bit, it you know, you can create really good magic there.
Very good. I know Estonian companies are terrible in doing the everyday planning. So, or not even everyday planning, but the long-term planning. It's really, really difficult. And understanding if the long-term plan is missing, they don't even understand what products, what markets, what client groups, then it might be a bit difficult to match it with missing competence because you just don't know.
Exactly. And you know also what it's like, because when you start to feel that, oh, people don't apply with our company or they leave, you know, and you feel that you do like mismatch recruitment. I mean, it's like I always tell, it's like the dating scene, right? It's like, you know, people are like, no, I don't want to be with you. And that gets so personal very often for small companies. So it's like they're almost ashamed to talk about it. And it's like a bad politician, you know, it's like, well, we have a fantastic agenda. It's just that the voters don't understand. Yeah. And then you really are on a slippery slope, right? It's like, well, because they maybe haven't understood the greatness of your company, then, you know, as with marketing, you need to explain it. You need to make it clear to the person, you know, if you want somebody to listen to you. I mean, when you have, of course, the packaging, you know. I mean, if I come to your homepage and it looks like, I don't know, from 1989, I might think that this might not be a very innovative company.
Probably.
Because it's sense, you know. And that's why marketing is so important. But sometimes HR are a bit that, okay, marketing is just, you know, some icing on the cake. And it's not, because we all know that good marketing stems from really good brands that you fill with something, right, that you respond to, that you... And for lots of companies, I also say that, I mean, it's very hard to get interested in something that you don't even know exists. I mean, if I want to date somebody, I can't just sit in my hotel room thinking that, oh, there might be a fire and a fireman might, you know, come in through the window. I you know, I need to go out there myself on the internet.
You have to
somewhere.
Light the fire.
Exactly. Yeah, I could do that. You know, and then I get prisons. I can't go, you know, to work. So, but it's and again, to put yourself in the other person's shoes, you know, because it's very often you think, of course, everybody knows about my company. And some companies are like, these candidates, they should know about us. Well, maybe they should, but that's not a good strategy, you know. Nobody does that with marketing, that we should know about this, you know. I mean, okay, if we want to make ourselves heard, then we need to speak, you know. Nothing happens by silence. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Can you tell me a couple of good examples about the internal marketing? What are the things that companies currently are testing and trying to kind of, what are the hottest things in internal marketing today?
Well, the hottest things, I mean, it all depends on your own company, okay?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, lots of companies realized, and I think we all have, you know, that some of the intranets are like, I mean, it's like a big file. People don't find anything, and it's not the least motivating to go into the intranets, right? That I mean, that's one thing people realize. It's like also because it's such a good scapegoat to say, oh, the policy about this and that and ABZ is on the internet, right? And I say it's like, you know, sometimes when my kids play cards, you know, you put all the cards on the table and then it's like, can I have all your fours, for example? And you say, no, they're in the lake. And sometimes, you know, they call this intranet in the lake. It's like, you know, you never know what kind of fish you get if you get any.
Okay, yeah.
So with the intranets, people realize people don't use it. And very often when we talk to clients today, it's like people realize that, unfortunately, in many companies, motivation is a bit low. And that's because people don't think that the company has a clear vision, like, where do we want to go? You know, which is our why? I mean, why do we exist as a company? What kind of problems do we solve for the clients, you know, or for our customers? Or, and so what we see a lot happening is that people sometimes, we see a lot of digital introduction with new employees, but then lots of companies realize that actually this introduction is just as good for all our existing employees, because sometimes there have been mergers and acquisitions, and people have been working there for some time, but you know, you really need to refresh that over and over again. And we can see that with the new companies, that you keep on boosting your staff, but also you check up on them, you know, to make sure, have you really done this part of the digital introduction, a bit like gamification, you know, you go from one level to another, and you make it very tasteful in a very nice packaging, almost like a game. So if you sit on the underground for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you know, you do like a little quiz, and you can see like leaderboards, how your other fellow employees are doing, you know, in a quite a joyful way. That's something we can see is really, really growing. And lots of the internal stuff as well. I mean, you talk a lot about content marketing today, that people have Instagram accounts, and then Instagram accounts that you don't really monitor, that you give maybe to different departments. Every week there's a different department that put on, you know, that own the Instagram account, even Snapchat, you know, using the social media, but not making sure it's not just like a megaphone, you know, we are so great and fantastic. It's more like your own staff just telling, this today we did this, and you know, very normal everyday situations, because very often they feel that even within the company is quite interesting. Oh, is that what they do over at that department? I mean, the more you know about yourself, you tend to be prouder and a better ambassador. So we can see that happening a lot, actually. And also, I think sometimes that even though you have social media, we can also see that in you really want to gather people like in real life. If you take, for example, the gaming company called King, they've done Candy Crush Saga. They have lots of young people, very hard to find some of these engineers. So they have a very good mix of, I mean, in real life, you know, you have really fun kickoffs, and then you make sure that you make really good small productions, small movies that your own employees really want to share in social media. So that you do lots of things, fun things internally to boost motivation, to boost people why they work there, but to make sure that it's so good that people, you know, voluntarily want to share the information. And that we can see happening, that people, you know, even though you do lots of things on internet, you also want to meet people in person, but you want to do it like in a mix, if you understand what I mean, you know, so you mix like the reality and in real life meetings with other meetings. And we can see that because people really need to meet, and people actually want to meet management as well, but they want to see them a relaxed management that can talk to them in a normal way, not just a PowerPoint, you know, festival, more like having like chats or, you know, talks, or you can download, you know, when you sit again on the underground, like a small, like cultural movie from the CEO or something. So it is a bit different, you know, the way you speak to people, I must say. And in Sweden, we have like, you know, we're not that hierarchical, and people can't really, you know, and I think if you look in other countries, you can see things are happening. If you look in Germany, where it tend to be much more hierarchical, you can see with young people coming into these like other kinds of companies where you're much less hierarchical and, you know, dress codes, etc. Lots of people like, no, I don't want to work in that big kind of corporation because I will be like a corporate person, and I'm not really sure I want to be that. And then unfortunately they lose out, I think, on lots of talents. Culture is very important.
Is there any difference between the big companies and the small ones? Because definitely the smaller ones don't have the resources compared to the bigger ones to do it, yes, in a kind of a creamy and in a very, yes, powerful and really kind of well-designed way.
Yeah. I mean, bigger companies, of course, they have more muscles. But on the other hand, sometimes they have bigger challenges as well. I mean, as we all know, in a smaller company, if you want to change the strategy, you can do that much quicker. And if we look at young people today, I mean, you don't want to work for the perfect company. You want to change the world yourself, and you want to be an important part of that. So sometimes, you know, working for a big corporation, everything looks nice and the packaging, everything is organized, but you sometimes feel that, oh God, you know, I'm just a small piece in a big factory. And for the smaller companies, we can see, you know, that innovation is very important, and you want to be part of it, and you want to be somebody, you know, then the smaller companies, of course, you know, can offer more. So it's always the pros and the cons. But for me, lots of people say, oh, you know, we don't have the resource, we don't have this and that. And I would say, I mean, I'm speaking, you know, for my sick mother, it's almost like, but I would say that, can you afford not to work with this question? Because companies are made by people, you know, and motivation. And unless you completely robotize your business, you would still need to sell it and nothing will happen itself. So I would say, again, it's very important. Whom do we want to work with? If you want to have, for example, a workforce with people who are highly skilled engineers with certain traits, well, then we really need to step into their shoes to see, okay, what do they find attractive? It might be something that I would myself find very unattractive, but that's, you know, the importance that do not look upon yourself and what you think is attractive, because very often marketing people, you know, tend to be quite similar. Think, oh, this is fun. Oh, this is great. Oh, it looks good. The packaging, fantastic. We might win, you know, a prize. But, you know, the effect might not be there because you have done some marketing for yourself, you know. So, again, test stuff, you know, and you know, try different things and make sure you know your target group and start a relationship with them. It takes time. This takes time.
What to do with a company that is big enough to incorporate all different staff positions, starting, let's say it's a kind of, I have a retailer who needs to have both people working on a shop floor, who needs to have shop managers, but who needs also to have a perfect IT department and marketing department and HR department. How should they solve the puzzle?
Well, at the end of the day, it's going to be the same brand, like we always talk about the umbrella. Who are we? I mean, for example, let's say that you are a retail company and, I don't know, you sell, you sell sofas, right?
Okay.
Or you sell furniture. I don't know. But not IKEA. But, you know,
IKEA.
But let's say that you sell, you sell something in retail. And, I mean, of course, we all know that it's hard to hire lots of people in on the shop floors because it tends to be quite a high turnover of staff, right? That's very often their challenges. But what I would say is at the end of the day, the company needs to find its core, you know, find its own history. Who are we and why do we sell sofas? It's not just that we sell sofas. We make sure that we sell something that make people want to go home and sleep in the sofa or, you know, have fun in the sofa or, you know, that sofa is an important part of their home, you know, to make people's homes more of a home, right? Because the sofa tends to be quite of a focal place. Everybody wants to sit in the sofa. And, you know, to start off, who are we? We are not just selling sofas. There's something more to it, you know. And that might sound a bit cheesy, but the interesting thing is that lots of companies who are good at this, why are we here, you know? It's much easier if you start them from within, you know. Why did we start the company? What do we believe in? Do we believe in that we always sell the best sofas or the best quality sofas or the best sofas for students? I don't know, you know, but you need to find something that makes you a bit unique.
Okay.
And that uniqueness you very often use, you know, as in marketing, of course, for people to buy more sofas, right? But it's kind of the same mechanism. It's like, okay, people working here, do they love furniture? Do they love home interior design? You know, I mean, then, of course, you want to attract people who really love interior design or people who love sofas, or because they will sell much more, you know, with their souls rather than just waiting for the paycheck. And you know, again, so every company, I mean, and then, of course, if you then want to recruit maybe IT people within the company, of course, you need to find, okay, what does IT people get more attracted by? And what are attractive conditions for IT people? I don't know. Is it working from home? Is it that you work with new systems? Is it that you're going to develop a new system? I mean, you know, what is it that they're going to work with? On the shop floor, is it... What attracts people who work in retail on the shop floor? Is it that they can have like a quick career or you know, what are their ambitions? I mean, so you have to really drill down to every target group. But at the end of the day, the IT engineer and the people on the shop floor or the manager, they all need to be kind of, you know, linked together that why do we work for this company, you know?
So the talk doesn't need to be only about the sofas. It might be challenging for each and every group. There is something uniting them still.
Exactly. But I would say that the brand still would unite them, that you're proud to work there. And, you know, some companies now also talk much more about their history and also to make sure that you have a vision. Like, where do we go? I mean, is it going to be like we have 3D printers making sofas, or is the stuff with us that you can custom made your sofa? I mean, we even have companies now in Sweden, you know, that only sell covers to IKEA sofas, right?
Yeah.
And they don't even make the sofas. They only make the cover because they realize that people want to change sofas quite often, but they can't afford it. So why don't we buy a new cover? You know, and I think that's quite a fun idea. And that is also to make life, you know, for a much smaller price, you can have much more change in your life, you know. And then it becomes like more of a big concept, if you see what I mean. Next time you might do covers for something else. I mean, it's again to find a little bit of the soul. I mean, like IKEA, they don't say that they just sell furniture. They make sure that you can buy for a small price really good furniture to make it really into a home, you know. Then it's something different, you know. Like phone companies, they talk about, we make sure that people can connect, you know. We improve people's lives, you know, by making it easier for them to connect to a better price, to make sure that you can call your friends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. And this why, you can see, is happening much more today because products change so quickly today. So you need to have something else in the culture, that why are we here? And that's very scary for lots of people because suddenly we talk about emotions and, you know. But at the end of the day, people buy with emotions and they buy jobs with that as well. You could have the best job, most fantastic job on the paper, but if the culture is not for you, you will not belong. You will not do your best.
Can you give me a good example about a kind of a distinctive culture?
Distinctive culture?
Distinctive culture within a company. How do they build it? Some tools?
Well, I mean, the classical Swedish example, of course, is IKEA. But, you know, what the interesting thing, I mean, they are really big, of course. And, of course, they have some turnover as well. But it's so fun. I mean, they are so immensely popular in many countries, but they work so hard with their employer brand to make sure that you're always on top, that you never lean back and think, oh, this is going to work out by itself. It never does, right? So you need to constantly listen and change, you know, change with your clients and change as well, you know, with your employees to make sure, you know, that you always, you know, you raise the bar all the time. And they really have a distinctive culture. And the interesting thing is that when they recruit people, of course, they look at the competences, but they also look, who are you? Do your values match with our values? If it does, good, then we have a match. And if it doesn't, you know, there's no use that you work here. We have certain values that makes us distinctive, that makes us different, that makes it easier for us to cooperate. And it's very brave to recruit looking only to start off with people's values, you know? Because it tends to be still today very often that we are quite square. We look at that person with that exact competence and this and this and that. And of course, you need to have the competence. But also, you need to know, what kind of person is this? You know, do the values match with ours? The problem is that lots of companies say, oh, these are our values, 4 words, and you put them up in the reception. But people don't really walk the talk with the values. And so I would say these companies that are really fortunate or that have a very clear culture, this is how we do things, they tend to be very, very much more attractive, I would say. But at the end of the day, that's something that you have to work with on an everyday basis.
But let's say, so if you had to choose, I have two persons, one has the competence, the other has the right values, and well, I mean, more choice.
No, I would say take the one with the right. Yeah, exactly. No, but I would say with the right, I mean, of course, I mean, it's not black or white, of course. I mean, if you have somebody who has absolutely no education and is going to run the IT department, of course, it's not like, oh, this is a happy, fun guy, you know, with the same values. I mean, you know, but I would say that, I mean, they say, you know, train for skills, you know, and take people for attitude, hire for attitude and train for skills. And I think there's a lot behind it. The problem is sometimes that when you recruit, you tend to recruit a little bit, you know, without maybe the right competence. That's what I would say HR is really good to bring in, you know, to be a little bit more, not just that you recruit your best friends all the time, you know, that you have to have a bit of a reasoning or a strategy saying, okay, that this is the kind actually of competence we need. But at the end of the day, we all know that it's so important with people with the right attitude. Very often, you know, I mean, much, much more often, you need to make people redundant or fire people because they have the wrong attitude rather than that they don't have the right competence. But of course it differs. I mean, if you want to have a nuclear industry, of course you need to have somebody who knows nuclear, right?
Yeah, true.
So of course you have some skills, of course, and competence that has to be there. But again, it's so important because, I mean, when you talk about employer branding, it's very much, I mean, it's like marketing as well. But you talk about the employer value proposition. And I mean, again, what is it that we offer and can we fulfill that offer? Because very often you want to paint your company in fantastic colors and then people start working there. And after 6 months, like, excuse me, you told me this and this and I can't really see it, you know. Was it just, you know, something that you painted and... Now the paint is gone, kind of, you know. So, of course, that you have to deliver on your promises. But then lots of companies still don't really know what it is that they offer. Sometimes they think, oh, we offer fantastic career paths. Do we? You know? And that could also be very individual, looking at the career path. Is it the career to become a manager? Is it to become a specialist? Is it to do other things? You know? So, again, it's a lot of internal soul-seeking before you can go out.
Yeah, it reminds me some Estonian companies who are subsidiaries of the Scandinavian companies, and where the names of the companies sound really, really international. And then people go to work there expecting the international career. And if you ask the companies, so how many career paths, really the international ones, have you had over the years? Yeah. And then they say, yeah, we have one. Over 10 years or 15 years of time. So it's a kind of, we can talk about that, but probably not the most proper.
No, and again, it's going to prove itself. I mean, if I start to work for that company, because I think, or that's my vision, or maybe I've been told, of course, I have you so many international possibilities. And the truth is no. Well, then maybe there has to be something else that we can offer. Because if this really doesn't work out, I mean, then people are there for the wrong reasons, you know. So it's branding, but you have to, you know, keep the brand promise.
Absolutely.
And that's why I say sometimes when people say we look for the best, right? People are, oh, we want to have the best people from the best business schools or the best engineers, et cetera, et cetera. And I sometimes say, of course, it would be fantastic to have these people, but can you really match what they want, right? And that is sometimes very hard to realize that, it's like dating again. I mean, it would be great to go out with Brad Pitt, but I'm sorry, I don't think he would be very interested in me. So maybe I should go for some other lower hanging fruit, you know. It's just that, whom do we aim for? And also to make sure, you know, what kind of environment would they work in, you know, and to make sure it's more of a long, you know, long-term plan. Of course, you should aim for the right people, but who is the best? And then very often I say to companies, because sometimes this gets very metaphysical, these discussions with the blue squirrels. I sometimes say, okay, who are your best employees today? If you could take 10 of them and clone them, who would that be? And then you can do some soul searching, saying, okay, these people who are really our best, and if we could clone them, these 10 people and have 10, where do they come from? What schools have they gone to? What was it that made them stay and flourish in our company? Why do they have such high motivation here? Well, you know, really, because that's much easier, because that's something that you have much closer instead of just looking for these fantastic dream recruitments, right? And that's why it's important with the talent management to make sure, okay, how do we make sure that these 10 people don't leave us? They're not going to stay forever, but if we can have them stay, maybe let's say 2 more years at least, you know, how do we, you know, ensure that? And also, what is it that we do that really attract these people, that they stay with us and that they develop? And very often, I would say when I talk to managers, is that these people have the right attitude. And they also have an attitude that they want to grow within the company. They are such good ambassadors very often, that they like the company, they like the work, and they are very easy to cooperate with. So I think you could find some common denominators when you look at these people.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Because I think it's a good recipe both for the peak companies, but also for the smaller ones. Because
definitely,
for the smaller ones, it's even more important to understand whom should I keep out of the 10 who I have and how to grow.
And I mean, let's say that you only are 10 people within your company. I mean, again, if you're going to recruit 2 more people, you know, that's a lot. You know, that's 20%. That's one-fifth, you know, the workforce. So, and also what I would say is... everybody looks for, I mean, everybody looks for the dream girl or the dream boy, you know, but of course, and sometimes you will make mistakes, but sometimes people they get so down with some of the mistakes. Oh, we tried that. We tried to recruit that and it never worked. And well, maybe you should try again. You see, because sometimes people are like, oh, it's no use. I mean, in Sweden, we even have people running companies and saying, oh, you know, my sons or daughters, they don't want to take over the company. So I think I'm going to close down, you know, when I retire. I mean, that's a shame. It's a shame for the country, you know. So to really make sure that, I mean, of course, you want your company to live on and the staff. But what I think today is it's, and in lots of companies, very hard to be honest and open. And if you have like older generations, they think it's so much hush hush. And today, the transparency, I think it's much better. Talk to your staff, you know, who are we and why do we work here? And, you know, what makes us prosper, you know? And sometimes also it's like, make sure that when you talk about budgets and profitability, I mean, do it in a different packaged way. So people are like, okay, now we understand. This is what makes us profitable. Because if we are profitable, then we can invest even more in people. And I think don't be so afraid of showing, you know, your employees. This is what the figures look like. Please help. Because very often, lots of the best ideas, they come from within. And this, that's why also...
And this is also what increases the motivation, that everyone can help to really make the best out of the situation.
Yes. And also, I mean, again, and if you feel that, oh, I'm a vital part, and we do this together... You know, lots of people get highly motivated by that, you know, because that, like, feeling, everybody wants to feel important, you know, that you're an important part in this company. And if we, this is the plan, this is where we want to, you know, head forward. This is how we want our clients to perceive us. This is how we want to be perceived as an employer, you know. Of course, you want to be proud. You mean, you spend at least 8 hours every day at your employer. Of course, you want to be proud when you sit at the dinner and people ask, oh, what do you work with and where do you work? And, you know. And it's like dating again. I mean, you don't want to date a guy who says, well, I'm perfect, but I have no plans. I don't know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, you know. No plans. I'm just going to go to my work and see if, you know. Of course, you want to meet people say, okay, well, in the future, this is what I'm aiming for. And it's also much more interesting with companies saying, okay, this is where we are today and this is where we want to be in the future. This is how we want to be perceived. Can you please help us? What should we do to improve this?